I just wanted to be the first guy out there on Stamkos. And we played the Kyle Dubas clip from last offseason after Erik Karlsson was acquired. And he said, when there's big game out there, he going big game hunting. What's bigger game than Steven Stamkos this offseason? It is April 17th. This will not happen until July. If it does happen, I wanted us to be first.
Oh, yeah.
This will become this show's Andrew Filippone falling in love with Jameis Winston. Maybe not quite to that extent, but I'm going to be pounding this drum until that guy signs someplace else.
All right.
NFL draft coming up a week from tomorrow. We're excited. We're doing a draft show. You, me, Donnie Football, and Jim Haslett is going to be part of our panel.
Big time.
That's awesome.
Can't wait.
Doug Whaley involved in some capacity. We'll probably talk to him on the phone. Maybe we can rope Mark Caboli into something as well. Or we can rope this guy in. He joins us on the Fan Hotline right now, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. He is Ray Fittipaldo. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Well, last night sucked, Ray, so we move on to football, where at least in the draft, hope springs eternal. A quick question here to start you off, man. You've seen all the visitors. Last week you came on and you said, weirdly, the Steelers didn't have a lot of centers come in. And since then, JPJ, since then, Zach Frazier. Organizationally, do you think they value the center position more or the tackle position more?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult question to ask when it comes to the draft. I mean, every team needs that center. I mean, look at the Steelers' history. You go from Webster to Dawson, you know, to Hardings, and then to Pouncey, basically, with one or two guys in between. It's a very important position. But when you look at it in terms of taking a center at 20, if you take a center at 20, that guy has to be special. You know, we're averaging like one center a year in the first round. Centers do not come off the board early. So right now, this week, like the hot guy is Graham Barton. You know, you look at his relative athletic score, you know, for an interior offensive lineman, not a tackle, but for an interior offensive lineman, he is one of the most athletic interior linemen to come out in the draft like in the last 35 years. So that projection of him moving from left tackle to center, there are a ton of people in the NFL who thinks he can be an elite player at that position. But it's a projection. So, you know, the whole thing about taking a center in the first round, I get it. You need one, but you got to feel that player is special. And I guess we'll find out about a week from now if the Steelers think Graham Barton is special.
Do you think they think either of the other two are special?
I mean, if you guys have noticed, JPJ has kind of been sliding down the top 50 list. You see him a lot now, like mid-second round in some of these mock drafts. So I think some of the steam has kind of gone out of that ship a little bit. I still think he could be in the first round conversation for some teams, but he doesn't seem to be, you know, he's the hot guy early, did really well early, and it just seems like Barton is maybe catching up to him. You know, I never really saw Frazier like as a slam dunk first round pick. I suppose it could happen late first round, but you also see him early to mid second round as well. So I think if there's going to be a center drafted in the first round this year, whether it's by the Steelers or anyone else, it's going to be Graham Barton, probably mid the first round.
Ray, if you're following betting odds, and over the last 2 months, the Steelers were favorites to land two guys over the last 2 months, and they had the best betting odds to land these guys, which was Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. And I kind of looked at that. I'm like, okay, like if that happens, that's pretty crazy. And it actually did happen. The last time I looked betting odds for Brandon Ayuk was the Pittsburgh Steelers. Is there any smoke around that as we sit here today?
Yeah, I mean, the draft can do funny things to GMs. And I think receivers and agents, more so than any other position in football right now, they really can make it difficult on GMs and coaches if their players don't report or if their players really want out of there. So, like, John Lynch kind of shut that down. He said, we're going to keep Ayuk, but that was a month ago. And now those, you know, those rumors are starting to heat up again. You know, Ayuk unfollows the 49ers on social media. I don't know. Most teams are kind of like in phase one now. I don't know if San Francisco has reported yet. So I don't know what's going on with his attendance there. But, you know, I think you could see some draft day trades this year. You know, Courtland Sutton and Denver didn't show up there. He wants a new contract. So I think you're going to see some wheeling and dealing. Whether the Steelers are involved in that, I'm not quite sure. You know, the price on Ayuk was a first-round pick about a month or two ago, but if Ayuk really wants out of there, maybe that price goes down. Maybe the 49ers just say, hey, we kind of want to get rid of this problem, like the Steelers said with Deontay Johnson. So listen, if it's for a second-round pick, or it's for, you know, like a third-round pick this year and maybe a second-round pick next year, then maybe the Steelers would consider doing that. But you also have to look at beyond this season, too. He's a free agent. You don't want to just give away a draft pick and rent a player for 1 year. You kind of want to know that guy's going to be on board for at least a couple of seasons.
Ray, do you think it's more likely the Steelers trade up in the draft or back in the draft?
Right now, you know, I'll say up in the draft. I think both are possibilities.
I thought you'd go the other way. Do tell.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the offensive linemen that they've brought in, Troy Fautanu from Washington, Talese Fuaga from Oregon State, you know, those guys are top 10, top 15-ish types of picks. You don't really see those guys falling to 20 a lot in a lot of these mock drafts. So I know they like those two players a lot. You know, I think they could probably stand pat and get Mims, but you know, if there's one of those guys that they really, really think can be a cornerstone to their offensive line, I could see them pulling that trigger again, much in the same way they did last year with Broderick Jones. But yeah, trade up probably more likely than trade down, but I could also see them standing pat in 20 and getting a good player, whether it's Mims or anyone else, you know, they brought in here in the last couple of weeks.
Ray, it seems like the Steelers are okay with their plan B option as we stand here today with center and Nate Herbig. I mean, if something doesn't fall their way, they feel comfortable with Nate Herbig being the center. Could we be seeing that on defense and in the defensive backfield as well with Corey Trice being healthy this year? I know they were high on him last year, obviously used a draft pick on him. He's a bigger guy, almost a Joey Porter Jr. size guy, played for Purdue. If they feel he's healthy this year, could he be like a plan B? Hey, we want to use him more just like we wanted to last year.
Yeah, so if they don't get a corner early in this draft, maybe Trice would be a guy. If he really comes on and plays well, maybe you can bump Dante Jackson inside the slot and then Trice could be outside. But I do think, Doran, we're a ways away from that. If you remember last spring, he was kind of the darling of OTAs. He was playing really well. You know, coaches talking him up. He, like you said, he's got that length and he's got that body type that they want in a corner now to shut down those outside passing windows. But then he gets injured real. I think it was the first or second day of camp. Mm-hmm. He blows out his knee, and then, you know, he's kind of – I remember late in the season, January, he just started straight line running. So not sure where he's going to be in OTAs this year. Hopefully he's ready for camp. But, yeah, I think if he comes on and they don't invest a day one or day two pick in a corner, yeah, I think he could certainly be in the mix for sure.
Raymond, we thank you for your service. We will talk to you next week, the day before the draft.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good week. I'll talk to you.
You too.
Thanks, Ray.
Ray Fittipaldo of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He says it's more likely they trade up. Based on how many needs they have, I think they'd trade back.
That's what I would think.
And especially with this late fall for JPJ, which I'm always asking why on stuff like that. What has popped up now that's got him falling? It's probably medical stuff.
Interviews.
Or he's interviewing poorly,
right.
Yeah.
You're investing a lot of money, a lot of time. First round pick on a guy, like, the interview process is probably the biggest situation that, you know, you go through as a player, especially if you're a first round grade. So they want to know that they're getting the right investment and they're putting their money, you know, in the right spot. So maybe it's interviews. I can't see it being anything else. I mean, I can't see an injury popping up.
I hate to do this to a young man who wants to make his nut, you know, but keep falling, big man. Keep falling. I'd rather Zach Frazier be here. I think the world of him, but keep falling, JPJ.
See, that's why I don't think it's injuries, because Zach Frazier's coming off an injury.
He is.
So wouldn't you be worried about that? Wouldn't he fall?
I know he's interviewing well. I know Zach Frazier's interviewing well. And they're probably seeing it was a relatively simple break. They fix it up, and that's that. It would be a mystery injury with JPJ,
right.
Which might even be more of a red flag. If he would fall somewhere into the 40 range, now we're talking about trading up in the second round for him. And it wouldn't be a massive cost to go up, what, 10, 11, 12 picks. That would be ideal for me. You get Mims at 20, and JPJ keeps falling. All of a sudden, you trade up, snag him, and your offensive line with Broderick Jones, with Mims, with JPJ is now set for the foreseeable future. Mwah. Yes, please.
I think Frazier's going to go late second.
Late second? He's getting more first-round buzz now. I saw him go in a mock yesterday, 30th. And we know that mock drafts are always right, Doran.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say what I was about to say. I don't want to poke a nerve.
Mm-hmm.
I also, Callis went to the bathroom during that segment. My radio instinct, I didn't want to cut Ray off because the information was so good. My radio instinct was to say, hey, Ray, Callis is coming back from the bathroom. We love you. We'll talk to you next week. I'm going to hang up on you. We're going to pretend like we're having technical difficulties, and we're going to freak out on Callis. We should have done that. But Callis was on the hop, and Ray was in the middle of an answer, and it just wouldn't have worked. Callis was spry. He was getting those buns moving to get back here on time.
Well, I got to be urgent. I'm not leaving you hanging.
Well, you left us hanging less than you would have otherwise left us hanging because you were kind of skipping back from the bathroom. But no harm, no foul. No issues. We're good. Penguins got a lot of issues. How do you fix them? And will they allow their late season surge to affect their decision-making next year? Should they? We'll talk about that next before we get back into Jared Jones at the bottom of the hour with John Wehner. John Wehner going to join us in 15 minutes to talk about Jared Jones getting lifted after 59 pitches in 5 innings last night. I wanted this song to build a little bit because it's good. Are we doing a Stranger Things new season? Is that coming out?
Oh, yeah, soon.
Let's go!
I think this summer.
Let's go!
I mean, they're done. They're all closed up production-wise and everything. I think it comes out.
So it's out. It's out there. They did it already.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, give it to her.
It's insane, too.
Really?
Yes.
Well, usually it comes out around Halloween
time.
It
might. You know what? It might come out.
I need
then.
It. I need it. And I need the soundtrack, too, because I'm sure it's banging. Anyway, October, that's when good things tend to happen in the TV world. We get Stranger Things. We also get the beginning of a new Penguin season. And I'm wondering just how different this roster is going to look next year. We're not going to see Crosby, Malkin, or Letang moved. I doubt we're going to see Erik Karlsson get moved. And I'm wondering, Doran, if the Penguins and Kyle Dubas this offseason treat this offseason the way the Steelers did a couple of years ago or the way the Steelers have done it this offseason. The Steelers went 9-8 in Kenny Pickett's first year, and it really felt like they didn't change much. They were players in free agency in terms of volume, not quality. They kept everything humdrum with Matt Canada, brought him back. Really, the biggest moves were draft pick related. This offseason, totally different. You clear the quarterback room. You bring in two guys who are both exciting in their own right. You spend more money on an average annual value basis on a free agent in Patrick Queen than you ever have before. You get rid of the offensive coordinator and bring in a new one. The Steelers saw the flaw in their ways and said, we're not going to keep doing the same thing and expect different results. And it's a GM now in year two is offseason. Same would be true now with Kyle Dubas this offseason. Last offseason, Kyle Dubas kind of did the Steelers thing. He got Karlsson. So that's transformative. That's a massive move. Every other piece were like the Noel Acharis of the world and Ryan Graves and bit players and Eller and some of them good, some of them not so good. I'm wondering if the Penguins brass, Dubas, the steward there, sees what they did down the stretch and just says, oh, we'll be fine. Everyone finally coalesced. We got everything going together. We're going to run it back mostly next year. I wonder what the mindset's going to be. Because it really should be more of what Omar Khan did this year as opposed to last year.
I guess it's kind of like a false like vision if you do what's down the stretch. But you have to look at what you did in the beginning of the season because that's why down the stretch you didn't make it. So in my mind, like you would have to construct and you would hope that you know, the players like St. Ivany and, you know, those guys that contributed down the stretch can contribute a little bit more in the beginning of the season. But if, you know, if I were to, I mean, you'd have to construct your roster of winning and having a hot start and getting younger. But, like, I mean, that's easier said. I mean, that's
but that's what you, that's, you're 100% right, though. That's what you need.
That's what you got to do. So for them to make moves, it would be, in my mind, like, we have to win as soon as the first puck drops.
Yeah, there has to be a sense of urgency all season long.
Yes.
It can't be like the Steelers, oh, you scramble to get in at the end. And like the Penguins the last 2 years, you got to scramble to get in at the end, and then you don't.
Like with Kenny Pickett and the Steelers, like it's like, okay, like we're testing the waters. Like, okay, well, you know, the San Francisco game, he didn't do well. It's like, all right, let's see if he can get better. This year with the Steelers, they're like, no, we're the first game of the year, we expect Russell Wilson to go out there and be efficient in the red zone, and we got to hit the ground running. We got to win 35-14 against in the first game of the year. Like, that's a different mindset. That's how the Penguins need to operate. Now, I don't know how to construct a roster to do that. But they need to operate that way. Like, the sense of urgency we had in the last 3 weeks, that needs to start the season and go all the way through the season. There's going to be ups and downs, but we need to start the season that way.
The Steelers fired Matt Canada, and they needed to. He wasn't a scapegoat. He was deserving of being terminated. And I wish him well in his life, and we'll see where he winds up. I don't know the guy, but the job performance dictated he should be fired. The same is true with Todd Reardon, who's in charge of the defense and in charge of the power play. But he'd be more scapegoating to me. You got to get rid of Mike Sullivan, and here's why. Jansen Harkins finally comes back healthy, and they play him the other night. They had been winning games, getting points in the games that they were losing, with a lineup that was younger. And the second Jansen damn Harkins is healthy, you put him back in the lineup? And it's not a, this is nothing against Jansen Harkins, but it kind of is. It's more of what he represents. Shea and St. Ivany, one of those guys ain't getting a chance if Graves doesn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
His default setting is never to play the young guy. His default setting is, let me go with the veteran. Let me go with the Noel Achari. Let me go with a Jansen Harkins. Let me go with a Ryan Graves. Jeff Carter's not going to be here next year. I'm looking at their lineup from the other night. Drew O'Connor, Sidney Crosby, Brian Rust. Yes, 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 they'll be Penguins. Bunting, Malkin, Raquel. They're all probably going to be Penguins, though if you could swing a hockey deal for Raquel, I'm not going to be pissed about that. Their third line was Smith, Eller, and Pustinen. I like Pustinen. I like Puljujarvi. I want both of those guys to get run next year. I like Benstrom. I want him to get some run next year. The prospect that just got hurt that could have played this year that they got in the Guentzel deal, I want him to play. Get Carter out of there. Find a taker for Riley Smith. Maybe Vegas. There was heat around that during the trade deadline. If they're going to not make the big transformative changes, if they are going to go the way of a few years ago with the Omar Khan plan and just kind of roll with the big stuff, I'd like to see those bottom two lines ship out the old, play the young.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see the same thing on the final defense pair. I don't think you're going to see those things if Mike Sullivan's the head coach. Because you could push it in that direction as much as you want if you're Kyle Dubas, but if the coach ain't going to play the guys, the coach ain't going to play the guys.
Right.
And I think, while I said that Stamkos could be a realistic possibility, just given what we've heard Dubas say after the Carlson acquisition, I also know that they want to get younger. And you're not going to get younger if Mike Sullivan's the coach, because he just doesn't believe in that. Coming up next, Jared Jones, unbelievably good last night. He's been wonderful for each of his four starts, but he's pulled after 59 pitches. 50 of them being strikes, no earned runs, 7 strikeouts. John Wehner's old school, baby. He joins us next. What are his thoughts on all of that? We'll talk to him.
If you smell what the Rock is cooking.
Wehner, deep left.
That's not the Rock stuff. That's Rocky stuff.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was predetermined that I was going 5 innings today, no matter what happened. So, it's, do you want to see me down the road or do you want to see me get shut down? That's what I think of it.
Jared Jones asked about getting pulled after 59 pitches. He seems okay with it. Dorn and I understand it. What's John Wehner think? The Rock joins us right now. John, good morning, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're very bad. Just a terrible sports night last night. Just awful. The Penguins aren't in. The Pirates lose. John Wehner brought to us by Allegiant Federal Credit Union. Shape your future. Visit AllegiantFCU.org. All right, so the question, John, is would you have pulled him? Do you agree with the decision there?
Well, many, many factors in that. I mean, if it's just a basic game and you have a guy that's, you know, pitched a bulk of innings throughout his career, it's not a decision at all. You leave him in. But I was actually thinking about this watching the game last night. Like, what are they going to do with this guy? Because I know when you have a young pitcher, or any pitcher for that matter, that has only thrown X amount of innings the year before, there's a threshold. There's only so far you're going to go the following year. It's usually like 30. A GM told me this about 10 years ago. You know, if you go more than those 35 innings, so he and Skeens both threw about 125 innings or something last year. So if you're not going to go over 160 innings with those guys this year. And so you do your math in your mind and know if he gets 30 starts, you know, five innings to start, there's 150 right there. And then what happens if you go to the postseason? I've thought about this with Skeens too, because you know you see this slow build up. You see these three innings and three and a third. Now we're at four innings or whatever. And I'm sitting here thinking like, all right, they're building him up because it's the first time he's pitching on 5 days rest, plus, you know, 120 some odd innings last year. You know, how many innings are they going to let him go this year? I mean, that's just kind of what the industry does right now, is they're only going to let him go throw so many innings. So then I start thinking with Skeens, I'm like, well, if there's a postseason, we're going to use the P word for the Pirates here. If there's a postseason, all right, what a disaster that would be if the Pirates get into the postseason and your two best pitchers are two guys that threw 120 some innings last year, and you can't throw them because they've reached or surpassed this threshold that they gave them before the season starts. So I mean, I'm not saying that's they're thinking that far ahead. But I knew they were going to limit their innings, both of those guys especially. And so that's kind of where I'm at in my head is, you know, how are they going to do that? How are they going to limit these innings?
John, on a positive note, how impressed are you by Jared Jones? I mean, what's his ceiling and what can he be? And can he sustain the way he pitches for a long time?
Oh, my gosh. I hope so. It's dominating. I know, you know, I've heard about him. I never watched him pitch before this spring training. And then you see the fastball and the slider. And so I'm like, and for some of the reasons I just talked about, I didn't think he had any chance of making the club, you know, because again, he's kind of in the same boat. I mean, although he's gone two straight years pitching on 5 days rest, you know, 120 innings, you know, he's a little bit ahead of Skeens as far as pitching in Pro Bowl. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, he only has a half year at AAA. You know, he doesn't have the greatest control if you look at the numbers. So I'm thinking he had no chance of making the club, plus because I thought they were going to, you know, limit and be careful with his innings. Now he makes his club, and he's dominating. He's one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball right now. I mean, it's disgusting. They can't touch his fastball. And his slider, and the command of his slider is what's impressed me so much. He only needs – there's only a few big league starters that can get away with just two pitches. He's getting away with just two pitches. And not only is he getting away with them, he's dominating primarily with two pitches.
And that's – I wouldn't say for me a concern – you do just kind of wait for the league to catch up a little bit. And I'm wondering if you think he'll need to develop a third pitch, John. And then the other thing, you talked about his control numbers in the minors. I mean, he threw 59 pitches. 50 of them were for strikes last night. My man is not scared at all.
Oh, he has four pitches, by the way. I mean, he'll flip a curveball in there now and again. And his first start, out of nowhere, he threw a changeup and struck out Josh Bell. So it's in there. He just doesn't need it yet. And now it'll be interesting to see if he starts incorporating more curves, more changeups, especially for the lefty, the changeup. And I didn't pay close enough attention to see if he threw any curveballs or changeups last night. But it's in there. It's in the arsenal. And so he does have more weapons. He just hasn't needed them yet. I mean, it's really filthy. He's way better than I expected.
John, are you concerned with O'Neill Cruz or Henry Davis at all?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, the offense, which got off to a great start, and, you know, you start telling her they're not going to score seven runs a game. It's not going to happen. I mean, everything they were doing was working. Everybody was getting on base. That they were involved in the ballpark. The clutch hitting was over the top. Now they're kind of in that rut where, you know, you're not bunching hits. You're not hitting the ball at the ballpark. And then you got two of your young guys, your biggest prospects that are really struggling right now. Cruz's timing looks way off. He's just, for me, you know, he's late on the fastball. You know, he's out in front of the breaking ball. He's having a hard time pulling a trigger at times, which is usually timing. You're not in a position to swing at times. The ball's by you before you can get the bat going. And so, you know, you miss a whole year. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but obviously he's got to get back on track because he's a big part of the offense. Henry Davis, yeah. I mean, the one thing that you know, everybody was worried about is catching, and I know I said this preseason with you guys. I'm more worried about his bat. The guy's got to hit. If he hits, he's going to have a position. And right now, his catching is better than his hitting. Who would have thought that? But, you know, these guys got to get it going. It's going to be an interesting thing when Grandal's back, and that might still be 2-3 weeks away. Because if Henry continues to struggle, it might be best to let him figure things out in AAA, you know, where you can slow it down a little bit. But I'm not saying that's going to happen. But, you know, if he's still hitting below 200 and not hitting the ball at the ballpark or driving balls and driving in runs, you know, it might best serve him to go down and play every day and figure out the timing and everything else he needs to do with the bat.
John, I want to get you in here for a full hour. I know we'd need the schedule to allow for something like that, because I want to ask you about your theory on all these pitcher injuries. We don't have time to get into that right now. We might not even have enough time to get into it with a full hour, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different – I mean, it's crazy. I don't know if it's velocity. I don't know if it's usage. I my biggest thing, I think, is they're throwing you around now. I don't know how much time they take off. You know, the old days, these guys were conditioned to go over the long haul and long toss. And, you know, they hardly threw at all during the winter. Now, these kids are in their, you know, in their computer labs with all the cameras and working on spin rates and, you know, pitch shaping and all that stuff. I mean, I got to imagine if you're throwing, you know, max velocity year round, that can't be good for you. But, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of variables. You know, it's a great question. You know, there's, and it's not just all velocity guys. I mean, there might be a higher rate for guys with high velocity, high spin rates, but, you know, that's the thing now. I mean, anytime you have any kind of soreness in your elbow, you're getting Tommy John. I'm sure there's a lot of factors.
John, we appreciate your insight, man. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks, you too. John Wehner. Coming up next, we've been bouncing back and forth. We got Doug Whaley at 9 o'clock. The NFL draft approaches. But next, a hypothetical. If you could only trade one of these two Penguins this offseason, who would you rather trade? We'll talk about it coming up next. You can tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. You can text us, brought to you by Edgar Steiner & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And I said Doug's coming up at 9. He's brought to you by Tri-State Office Furniture, the best in the business. 50-minute mark on the fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Our thanks to John Wehner for jumping on with us in the last segment and talking Jared Jones. That segment brought to you by Gutter Helmet. Say goodbye to gutter cleaning forever. Gutter Helmet by Lenore Home Solutions, 888-5-HELMET. A little hypothetical for you, Doran.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Whaley joining us at 9 in about 9 minutes. Okay. if you could only trade one, Tristan Jarry, Erik Karlsson.
Jarry.
I thought that might be easy. But here's why it's a little bit more difficult for me. Just based on how much money is tied up in Karlsson. You have $15 million in cap space now. If you can move on from Karlsson, you could have a lot more cap space. I would also agree, though, it's Tristan Jarry.
How much cap space would you have at Jarry?
5.35, yeah. I think, is the exact figure off the top of my head. You can't roll it back out there with that guy.
No.
It's going to be really funny tonight, man. Heck, it's going to be funny around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, because he's going to post a shutout.
You know what? He probably will.
Yep.
Right? Neither team's playing for junk. The Islanders are locked into their playoff spot. The Penguins are locked into their loser status. Tristan Jarry, I would bet good money he's just going to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be the guy. And he would not have been the guy if they were playing for something. And that tells you everything you need to know.
Exactly.
Like, I want this to be, I'm sure he's a nice kid. I want this to be the last time we see Tristan Jarry in a Penguin sweater. I didn't disagree with the move at the time last year, and I look like I got egg on my face for it. I mean, he did what he always does. Last eight games, .870 save percentage. He was sick. He was unable to perform because he was sick, and then he got usurped by a guy who played 15 NHL games last year, and you couldn't throw him out there in the key ones. It was a must-win game the other night against Nashville, and Tristan Jarry's not out there. Okay, so if you're not going to play him then, when he's your $5-plus million guy and Ned's making 1.5, well, then what makes you think he can be your guy next year?
You give him opportunity and goes in there and he flubs too.
Yes!
Like, that right there was what I mean, you get
Ned
your
gets pulled, he comes in and sucks.
Yeah, there it is.
And you can explain it away, I guess, if you're looking for excuses. Oh, he's cold, he's rusty. Yeah, he's cold, he's rusty because they didn't trust him. Because they didn't think he could win the game. Like, if it comes down to, you can either move one guy or the other, I'm absolutely moving on from Tristan Jarry. And if they're unable to get something done with Nedeljkovic, I don't think I'm heartbroken about that either. I would bring him back if it's for the exact price you paid him this year. If his play down the stretch earns him the negotiating power to go out there and get a better deal, and then he comes back to you, Kyle Dubas, and says, no, I actually want 2.5. All right, man, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your time. We really appreciate you getting us back to relevancy. But nah, we're not paying you 2.5. They've got a prospect in Wilkes-Barre who might be able to factor in. Maybe he could be the backup next year. I'd have to look at the goalie market. It almost doesn't matter what the market is. It can't be Tristan Jarry. It just can't. And I would do the same thing the Steelers did at quarterback with goalie.
Yes.
Unless Ned wants to come back for $1 million or $1.5 million. I mean, he's a backup. You don't want your backup to be a starter. And if you're paying him 1.5 to be the backup, I think you're fine with that.
Yes. Tough.
It is tough. And I expected so much better from Karlsson this year, too. And he put it together down the stretch. At least there's optimism that he'd be able to be better next year because of what he did show down the stretch. The Red Wings, couple of misplays notwithstanding. I guess there's some hope there, but not a ton of it because the power play still sucked. Doug Whaley's going to join us for a full hour coming up next, and we want to ask him about Jared Jones and organizational decisions that would go into that. Like, that's not just a Derek Shelton call, so Doug will be good to talk on that. And then also, before we get into the football with him, what would he do if he's Kyle Dubas with these Penguins this offseason? So that's all on the way. With Doug Whaley coming up next, Fan Weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Spring is here, and so are the deals at Sun Chevrolet, sunchevy.com. Today, high of 75, low of 58.